The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
Welcome to On Trial, starring Mark Rattledge, also starring Sean Comer. Hope you're ready, Hollywood, because you're on trial.
All rise. Court is now in session. The Honorable Harry T. Stone presiding. This is On Trial, a production of the Rattledge Broadcasting Premier Network, Podcast Network. All right. I am your host, the mandated reporter and frankly unmortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight I am actually the judge of these here proceedings as we put the Ryan Reynolds 2011 feature Green Lantern on trial. And joining me tonight, reporting for the prosecution from Freaky Pictures, ladies and gentlemen, Dorian Price. How do you do, sir?
Not too bad. How are we feeling, boss?
We're good. We are absolutely good.
I do have to point out that the two times we've done this, at least that I've been on here, and I went back and watched the other one, every time you said all rise, everyone just sits there and looks at you like, motherfucker, I ain't moving shit.
I said, get up.
Delete it.
Everybody stand up. We'll be staring right into the crosshair.
Right, just like, yes.
Please put your penis on the podcast. Speaking of putting his penis on the podcast, look, ladies and gentlemen, I said last night, I don't ask people to do this. They come to me. And, you know, some would call this a podcast network. Others have accused it of being a cult. And that is, I bring somebody on, they bring a friend, that person brings a friend, and before you know it, there's like 20 people wanting to talk movies and television shows with me. So for joining us for the first time, for the last time, ladies and gentlemen, friend of Dorian Price, Matt Kettner. How do you do, sir?
Hey, glad to be here, guys. I've watched the show quite a lot, and yeah, I thought it was a cult, but since there was no virgin sacrifice, I figured it was low end.
Well, you haven't been here long enough.
The club, I got it.
We can't put that on YouTube. We get demonetized in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
That's my first time, guys. Give me a little bit
of that. You got to check out our Patreon.
OnlyFans.
That's right. Yes, please go to the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network OnlyFans for the Virgin Sacrifices and
good. That's good.
Robert Winfrey's penis. Right after the show. And Robert Winfrey's penis ratings. All right, I could do 20 minutes on that, but I'm not going to. So tonight, this was not my idea.
Disown it on the first minute. That's great.
Oh yeah. Like Shirley Manson said from Garbage. This is not my idea of a good time. This I was approached, cornered, if you will, by both Dorian and with Dorian. Really, Dorian came to me and he was like, "Hey, we have a friend who watches the show." That's how it always starts. It always starts with just a little watching. He was like, "Hey, I have a friend that watches the show. He's seen me. He's seen Alexis. Come on here." I guess like you'd seen like the Five Nights at Freddy's show. I think you were in the viewing audience for Sleepy Hollow. And he was like, "Hey, he likes what you guys do, and he's got a passion. He's got a bee in his bonnet for the Green Lantern movie." And I'm gonna pitch it to you, Dorian. Take it from there on how we ended up doing this tonight.
Well, Mac and I have argued and debated movies since we've known each other. We've been friends for about 20 years now. Like I was barely in double digits when we met. So we've argued movies back and forth, and we usually always walk away with like, okay, you liked that one, I didn't, but I can see why you like it. Move on. There's been one, however, that has just never, like, it's United States versus North Korea level of never agreeing on this, and I got my finger on a button, motherfucker, so you watch it. And that movie has been the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern. The most interesting part has been... I'm sorry?
It brought about many fuck yous, as I recall.
Yes.
Green Lantern, the most contentious movie in the history of cinema.
It will break your mind. It will break your friendships. It will break your will. Green Lantern.
But yeah, crazy. So it's when he would always give me some feedback after the show on how I did, because again, I'm not an actor, but he is he's been in the I'm gonna let him brag about himself, but whole point being that he would give me pointers after the show, and you know, I was like, well, you know, would you ever be interested in being on there and talking about something? And we just were like, yeah, you know, I think On Trial would be fun, you know. There's a movie comes out I want to review, then we can do that. But On Trial would be fun. And we're like, well, what movie are you going to On Trial? And there was like 30 seconds of silence. And we both, again, we're on the phones. So we're not looking at each other. But I looked at the phone and went, Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, yeah.
It's either going to be Green Lantern or Ghostbusters 2. So, you know, that's.
we've already done Ghostbusters 2. I ain't redoing it. All right, Mac, tell us a little bit about you. 50 words or less. Who are you? Where are you from? What do you do? What do you like? What are your fetishes? Whatever you want to tell us. Where can we find OnlyFans?
Yeah, well, virgin sacrifices are not involved there. I live in Independence, Missouri, in a plush mansion, as you can tell. That's my kitchen off to the right. I'm a computer guy. We used to call ourselves programmers, but when you work in IT, you do programming, you do repairs, you do systems integrations, you do all sorts of crazy things. And I can't claim to be good at all of it, but I'll get right up to my elbows in it until I am. And I'm also... much longer than that, I've been a thespian. I do plays, I write plays, I direct plays. I'm an actor. I'm a whatever is needed. I like acting best. I like directing best, but that's because I'm an actor. You know, all actors want to be directors. That's just how it is. And I met this guy. In fact, I met Dorian at an audition. You remember that?
Oh yeah, Hello Dolly.
Yeah. I met him on an audition. We started talking. We got along right away. And the talking that you're about to hear tonight was born on that day 20 years ago. So we've been tight ever since. And that's pretty much me.
Cool. Let's talk about Green Lantern. I read Green Lantern comics when I was a kid, mostly the Hal Jordan stuff. I don't think I just tended to favor Marvel more than DC. And what DC I read was mostly Batman, because, you know, who didn't read Batman? But I read a fair amount of Green Lantern. He didn't get much play in any of the cartoons I watched, like, you know, the Super Friends and all of that. That was the big one for me. So like, I knew of Green Lantern. I liked Green Lantern, but I don't have the lore of a Sean Comer or some of the other guys, Pat Mullen, two huge Green Lantern super fans. And like I said, I didn't know John. For the longest time, people referenced John Stewart, and I swore to God I thought they were talking about the host of The Daily Show.
Exactly. I heard that. That's what I thought.
I would watch that movie, though. I would with him in it.
Yeah, I will totally go for, like, you know, nebbish Jewish Green Lantern, played by John Stewart.
That was...
So I knew of Guy Gardner, though, but I knew of Guy Gardner only because I thought his leather jacket was cool, because I liked, you know, I liked black leather biker jackets back in the day, being a metalhead from New York and all. So go to you first, Dorian, and then Mac. Were you a Green Lantern fan? Did you read the comic books growing up?
I read comic books kind of much like you, Your Honor. We'll just start this role play now. Much like you, Your Honor, but on the opposite side of it, I didn't have a lot of Marvel in my life. Marvel was kind of seen as the dark side, but I was raised very strict Southern Baptist and insane. So that, but that's a whole nother podcast. The Radlich is new thing. Our podcaster's therapy hour. coming 2020 never. But I did watch, since I wasn't more big of a DC fan, mostly Batman. There was obviously the Batman animated series, which would give away to the Superman animated series, which would then give away to Static Shock. And then finally, well, not finally, but they would really kind of culminate all their ideas together in the Justice League cartoon show that would run from the early 2000s to about early 2010s.
You're talking about the awesome Justice League Unlimited show, right?
Well, actually, Justice League Unlimited is the sequel to the original Justice League show.
That line of cartoons.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. And in that, as you were just talking about, the character John Stewart would appear, who is a former Marine, who is also shows up in the comic books. He was Hal Jordan, who would appear in this movie. The character of John Stewart would be Hal Jordan's successor after Hal Jordan goes fucking nuts and becomes Parallax. So I really grew up with
all right. The Emerald Dawn, Emerald War, whatever it's called, with Hal Jordan with all the rings on his fingers and looking a little crazed. There are certain comic book, for those looking to buy me presents, there are certain comic book covers that I want to be made and framed into posters and hung on my wall as art. That's one of them. It is fucking that comic book cover is fucking dope. It's one of the best.
So through friends of mine that were a lot more into comic books than I was, I became more interested or introduced to the character of Hal Jordan, because at the time that the Justice League cartoon show was doing John Stewart, the comic books that my friends would bring over and show me had Kyle Rayner. Mm. Kyle Rayner is the youngest of the Lanterns, I mean, until recently, but you know, he was the Lantern that had gotten the ring when I was alive and comic books were coming into my life. And so that's when they announced that almost said Hal Jordan, that Ryan Reynolds would be playing Green Lantern. I'm like, oh, they're gotta make him Kyle Rayner. Kyle's goofy. He's younger. He's kind of got this, I'm charming, but I don't think I'm hot shit like Hal did. So when they announced Ryan Reynolds, I really thought that they were going to go Rayner. I prayed they weren't going to go John Stewart. I'm like, don't make the white guy the black. I'm going to have to kill all of you. The internet's a thing now, guys. It's not 1978 anymore where you can just get away with it and go, la, 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 we can't hear you. We can burn your letters as they come in. So that was my experience and my introduction to Green Lantern. I always thought the character was cool. Thought the oath was interesting. And did a lot of research for this trial on the character itself. But we will get to that in a moment.
I got into Green Lantern a lot more as far as the lore much later. I started reading the John Byrne run. I got two books into that. I started reading a little bit of the New 52 run. I have one of those trades. Definitely as an adult, and you know, and they had stretched out, processed out the lore of the Green Lanterns, where there were all these different other lanterns besides the Fear one. You know, they had the Rage Lanterns, and then the Orange Lantern. Yes. They did that, of course. Who hasn't read Blackest Night by this point? So like, I've read that. There's a lot of like, I don't think I would have appreciated this stuff as a kid. I definitely do as now as an adult, and I've gotten to know the Hal Jordan and John Stewart and a little less the Guy Gardner versions of Green Lantern. I still don't know that much about Kyle Rayner, except that he becomes like a space god at some point.
Everybody does eventually, it seems like, if you're a Green Lantern, something goes horribly wrong.
If you're not a comic book character who doesn't turn into a space god, you're just wasting your life. For fuck's sake, the Punisher turned into Cosmic Ghost Rider.
We're right.
Running out of ideas. Mac, tell us your relationship to the Green Lantern history.
I got into comic books pretty early in life, just mostly out of my parents were desperate to get me to read anything. I was uninterested in reading. And then a friend of theirs said, hey, I've got this whole box of old comic books. Well, they weren't actually that old, but amongst them were Green Lanterns. And I fell in face first. Everything they had, I read, and even the stuff I wasn't terribly interested in, I read. I never got past Hal Jordan because I wasn't that interested in the character. I'm an Army brat, so a Green Lantern Corps, I'm not going to call it a turnoff, but it wasn't as interesting as anything else. I was interested in the individuals who wore the rings, why they had the power, what they did with the power. I'm always interested in what people do with the talents and abilities that they have, and I wanted to see what the writers would do with someone who was not unlimited, but certainly not very limited. What would you do with that? And I'm always thinking to myself, where do you take a character like that? But I never got past Hal Jordan. I didn't find out that there had been a Green Lantern other than Hal Jordan so maybe 10 years ago. My interest in Green Lantern was very lax, but my interest in storytelling is pretty passionate. And when someone goes to the trouble of making a big, expensive, heavy risk movie, I'm going to give them as much chance as I can. And I see people being dealt with really unfairly in Hollywood. and not just by Hollywood, but by the expectations Hollywood throws out into the public, who they eat up like gummy bears. So my interest in Green Lantern is, I'm going to say, moderate. But I understand that there are, I have friends who are deep in Green Lantern core guys. They've all got a ring. Even if they don't wear it, they walk around with it. If you say, where's your ring? They'll reach into their pocket and get it for you. So I have some idea of their disappointments and why they were disappointed. And I feel like a huge injustice happened, which is how Dorian and I got to talking about it. We was grousing about a number of movies that were overblown and didn't meet the standard. And he touched on Green Lantern, and I said, "Hang on a minute."
And that is how we got here. Okay, I want to quickly read this to you guys. This is in the Wikipedia page under development. It's a third paragraph in. Guggenheim said that the script would contain characterizations inspired by the Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams run on the comic in the 1970s and Dave Gibbons' work in the early 1980s. He added that he and his co-writers also looked to the 2000s, Jeff Johns. I said John Burns earlier. I meant Jeff Johns' stories. It's been interesting because we finished a draft just because John's Secret Origin story arc had started up. So I've been reading Secret Origin with a real interest in seeing, okay, how did Jeff solve this problem? There are certain elements just for anyone trying to retell Hal's origin for a modern day audience has to address and grapple with. For example, why the hell did Abin Sur flying in a spaceship when he's a Green Lantern? You don't ask that question back in the Silver Age, but when you're writing in the modern age, you have to answer these things. Folks, the Green Lantern movie stands accused of being a few different things. One, a poor representation of the Hal Jordan Green Lantern character as anyone knew him at almost any age of comics. It stands accused of having the wrong actor play Hal Jordan. Again, Ryan Reynolds has been said to would have made a better Guy Gardner, maybe Kyle Rayner. But Hal Jordan, the way this character is written, this is not a Hal Jordan anyone recognizes. So people have accused it of being Ryan Reynolds being the poor choice for a poor representation of that character. And again, I'm going to read directly from the wiki here. The last thing it is being accused of is, and this comes from Rotten Tomatoes, which, by the way, this is a 26% on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's not just the nerds that hate this movie. Noisy, overproduced, and thinly written. Green Lantern squanders an impressive budget and decades of comic mythology. So that is where we are going to begin tonight. And Dorian's going to give us his prosecution of this movie, and then Mac will step in to defend it. So go ahead, Dorian.
Thank you, Your Honor. Still weird. Reason number 750, why Dorian isn't a lawyer in real life. Thank you, my brother. I appreciate that.
If it pleases the court. Oh, it does.
I remember coming into seeing this movie like a lot of friends around my age. And honestly, when we went to see it at midnight, there were a lot of people that were more older, that were a little bit more mature, which I thought made sense because, again, as I pointed out before, my generation was reading comics. We knew of Hal Jordan, but, you know, Kyle Rayner was the leading guardian at the moment, or John Stewart. So a lot of people came into this movie very excited. And I remember I could feel the energy in the theater. Within 30 minutes, and again, I'm not counting, you know, the trailers, 30 minutes of the movie actually starting, you could feel people starting to go, something has gone horribly wrong here. And that's what I want to address today. Everything that was spoken about on the wiki, I have to agree with. And let's start with the casting of Ryan Reynolds. Hal Jordan, throughout the comic books, and I went back before this trial, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't just talking out of my ass. And no matter how much Mac is going to say I am anyways.
It's never stopped you before, man. Come on.
We must
order. Order. We will have order in my courtroom.
Ryan Reynolds can do many things right, even if the role isn't perfectly tailor-made for him. Now, again, Deadpool, perfectly tailor-made for him. X-Men Origins Wolverine messed with that character, but that wasn't Reynolds' fault. Reynolds thought he was going to be playing a character that he loved and, you know, was a big deal for him. And until the end of that film, I feel that Ryan Reynolds does a good job in bringing a, you know, pre-mask and destroyed face Deadpool fairly well. X-Men Origins Wolverine sucks. But then when we come to Green Lantern, he seems lost the entire time. He seems like he's not being directed to be a character. He's just been told be Van Wilder in space or be Ryan Reynolds in space. Which makes no sense, because I've seen even previously that Ryan Reynolds has the acting ability to be any character. Now, I'm sure there's some that are outside his range and he wouldn't take. But I believe he took this because he thought it would shoot him into the big leagues. And in a way, it did, just not in the right direction. But the entire storyline alone that we have, and just very brief, I'm not gonna do the plot layout like someone else who may be watching and will yell at me next time I'm on the show, and he is too, but that's okay. Drama, ratings. The whole movie starts off with, we get a brief explanation of the Guardians in a weird art style, but, you know, comics can be weird art styles too. Character of Abin Sur.
I shouldn't interrupt the prosecution's argument, but look, we take men in funny hats that eat planets and then we turn them into gaseous clouds. Yeah. I can't speak to what Hollywood does with the idiocy of comic books.
No, I was going to get to gaseous cloud, but, you know, appreciate that. Yep. But there is a Green Lantern named Abin Sur, played by the actor who played Jango Fett, probably for the second time in his career, going, I got to stop doing these CGI motherfucking movies, man. It is just kicking me directly in the face. He is wounded by a entity called Parallax, whereas the Green Lanterns take their power from Will, and that is turned into green energy. Fear, which is the ring I've got on now, like I said, Fear uses yellow energy. Parallax, used to be a guardian who turned evil. It's a story you've heard 1,000 times. You know, he was once our brother, but now he has betrayed us. And so they put him in a stupid prison that anyone could break out of. So Abin Sur is wounded. He flies to Earth, because part of the Green Lantern thing is that the ring, if it realizes its wearer is dying, will go find a new bearer for that ring so that, you know, the protection of that Green Lantern sector can stay secure. That's how we meet Hal Jordan. This is where I'm going to stop, because there is a movie 2 years earlier called Green Lantern First Flight.
Mm-hmm.
Animated. Had a great voice cast. Nathan Fillion from Firefly fame was the voice of Hal Jordan. Victor Garber was the voice of Sinestro. And up to that point, it followed the same general idea. Abin Sur had been wounded. He was dying. Ring found Hal. The ring has chosen you. You are now a Green Lantern. Boosh! We're going to take you to space. You're going to meet the Guardians. That movie kept us in space. It kept Hal. We did get to see Hal in his, you know, regular life. He was a fighter pilot. He's very egotistical, you know, not in a, you know, dancing fun way. He's just like, I'm just the shit. Which again comes back to the casting. Tom Cruise wanted this role. I understand why the production company may have gone against that, because then they would have been like, well, everyone's just going to think it's Top Gun in space. You know, you've already kind of played Hal Jordan. You know, you just didn't get a ring. But First Flight took us in space. We saw Hal being trained by Sinestro. Our main villain in Green Lantern First Flight was Sinestro. We got time to get to know him. We got to know why he was disagreeing with the Guardians, why he was kind of becoming this bad cop. You know, who was taking bribes and shit like that, and Hal going, wait, that's not right. So Hal, you know, becomes the young good cop to the cynical old cop. And when watching that movie, I got a lot of Training Day with Denzel Washington vibes that really was good. And I was like, this is a Green Lantern movie. Okay, if they can do this at Warner Brothers Animation, surely our big screen one's going to be perfect. And we got this. We got sitting on Earth most of the time. We got a brief training segment that ends with Hal going, he's right. I'm only human. I suck. I quit. Hi, we're like 20 minutes into this thing, bro. If you're going to do the third act breakup, you got to wait till the third act. We got to get there first. So we spend time with him on Earth. He's already quit, but he gets to keep his ring for some reason. Whatevs. There's not even a whole, like, the Guardians go, no, he must keep the ring because he will find his destiny. There's no line that says that. He's just like, I quit. deuces, bitches, I'm out. And, well, okay. I'm like,
is anyone going to get that ring back from him? He'll be fine.
It'll come back on its own.
So we go back to Earth. We get one of the weirdest villains in DC history. And again, Marvel isn't, you know, even pre-MCU Marvel. Gaseous Clouds, we did for oh, okay. Damn.
I was going to say, if we're going to get into, like, the weirdness of Marvel and what's the Stan Lee's partner that developed, like, all the Marvel cosmic stuff.
Steve Ditko?
No, I can't remember his name now, but... I mean, between like the Living Tribunal and all the goofy shit from Marvel's, you know, yeah, the list goes on forever.
But with this one, we're introduced to Parallax, who seems to be this horrifically large creature, but a piece of him got in Abin Sur that has now infected this dude, who's kind of like Hal's complete opposite. He has no self-esteem, you know. He's the young guy whose hair receded way too early, and everyone seems to give him shit for it. He's too smart for his own good, blah, blah, blah. So, and instead of having an interesting confrontation with this guy, he just kind of morphs into this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde version of himself, except he goes, there's no, hey, this is wrong. I don't agree with the feelings in me. You know, this entity, whatever I've taken into me, is making the darker thoughts of mine
He turns into Topher Grace's Venom.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I've got that literally right here. Thank you.
Right. I shouldn't be helping the prosecution. I gotta shut up.
I got Judge Bingo.
The judge may be on the take.
Don't kiss in front of me, okay?
The green screen just goes down. It's a whole bunch of my friends looking like gangsters from the 30s with like baseball bats.
Listen, I'll kiss whoever I want. You're not my supervisor or my girlfriend. Go on, Dorian.
This is where your girlfriend chimes in and goes, hey, no kissing anybody.
Like, I'm waiting for the comment any minute now.
The villain is Rush. One of the things that was said in the wiki, I will quote again, thinly written. This isn't just thinly written. This is harshly edited. It seems like huge chunks of this story have gone missing. We are just jumping all over the place to random up. It looks like a supercut that a fan did of, hey, this movie was like 2.5 hours long. Here are my favorite parts of it. And except, and the bad thing is that in this case, that fan is an idiot. Because it just goes off the tracks. We have no idea where we're going. Worst part is our villain decides he's going to kidnap our female love interest, because we have to have a female love interest. And that's played by Blake Lively. And she's there throughout the movie. There seems to be, there's obvious that there was an old relationship between her and Hal that, because of him accepting his new duties as Green Lantern, seems like it's maybe kicking up again. And I will say, since the judge has been helping me, let me help the defense here for a moment. In all of superhero dumb, this movie has, Green Lantern has probably one of the best lines about secret identities. And I quote, Hal? Hal?
How did you know it was me?
I've known you since I was a kid. I've seen you naked. You think I wouldn't recognize you because I couldn't see your cheekbones?
We're looking at you, Clark Kent.
Okay, right? So since we're taking a timeout from the format, I have to say, if I were prosecuting this movie, I would be doing at least 5 minutes on, did Blake Lively forget how to act?
Whoa!
She's so bad in this, I forgot it was Blake Lively. And I'm like, what porn set did they drag this poor girl from?
Blake Lively's a good actor. Again, we've seen her in good stuff. This one, again, felt like it was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like they didn't give her much to do. I'll come back to a DC property that everyone loves that had come out about 6 years earlier. Even with Batman Begins, as bad as Katie Holmes did in certain scenes, you still felt there was a reason why she's there. And not just to be the romantic lead. This felt like either the script kept changing, the execs couldn't figure out what it was. And again, in my research, I found out the script had been changed several times. Uh-huh. Excuse me. Woke up with the day with a badger in my throat. And it hasn't decided to leave yet. The biggest issue, and this is where, for me, as a filmmaker, it comes to, is the reason I was very excited for this movie was because of who was directing. And I'm sorry, my notes went down. One moment. Cut to commercial.
He would like to submit to the court the following evidence.
Right.
So sorry. while you're searching, just so I can fill the time here, I rewatched this the other day, and I'm going to feel free to use this, Mac, if you're on the same page as me. If you didn't call the movie Green Lantern, you just called this, Waiting to the Superhero Story. It's fine. It's a perfectly serviceable, pretty standard superhero movie. The problems come into this is in no way any Green Lantern that I recognize outside of maybe aesthetic.
Absolutely. Martin Campbell is the director. Now, Green Lantern is, I would say, probably pretty tough to bring to the screen. There's got to be a lot of CGI. There's not a lot you can do practical effects wise. You know, you have got a guy who can shoot stuff out of a ring, and, you know, it's 2011. We've got good special effects. The reason I am so disappointed is because Martin Campbell, not once, not twice, but three times, has brought a character back that was pre-existing from obscurity and nailed it each time. Case in point, starting off with GoldenEye. He brought Bond back into... We still had some goofy fun, but we got out of the Roger Moore era. You know, obviously, Timothy Dalton was Bond in between them, but those directors and writers for that Bond thing wanted to make Bond too violent. Audiences didn't like that. Martin Campbell was able to give us a more realistic, up-to-date James Bond and still make us all love him. And again, that came down to good casting. But again, that's not always on the director. That's on the production company. Next in line, we have Mask of Zorro. Most people who knew Zorro knew it from the cheesy as hell, still fun, but cheesy as hell Disney show from the 60s. And the handful of good or bad movies when it came to Zorro, that seemed like another one they couldn't get right. But Martin Campbell gave us Anthony Hopkins and Antonio Banderas and a very young Catherine Zeta-Jones is starting her career and reintroduced this character. And for most of us, introduced the character in such a way that I still watch that movie. It's in my top 10 of all time. And then Campbell does it for a third time, although with the same character of James Bond. And this time with Daniel Craig. He gives us a visceral, realistic. So I know this director can handle difficult characters that everyone thinks you're going to lose and you're going to fail on like a master because he's done it three times before he even got to Green Lantern. Now, every director has their bad movie. I mean, if we look at Spielberg as the top of the list, he'll tell you, hey, 1941 and AI, my bad, guys. Or more recently, in some people's opinion, Ready Player One. But that's not what we're prosecuting today. This, I believe, Green Lantern is the beginning of the end for DC. By this point, we already have, like, again, we've got the Dark Knight trilogy that's wrapping up about the time Green Lantern comes out, but that one's set in a realistic world. None of the other superheroes are allowed to play in the sandbox. That was Chris Nolan's, you know, that was his thing. But we've already got the MCU coming hot and heavy out of the gate. I mean, say what you will, but like everyone loved Iron Man, Iron Man 2. Okay, you know, not as good, but you know, sequels are tough. You know, we've got Thor, and hell, even Thor did this kind of storyline that Green Lantern was trying better. And heck, we give that movie crap all the time of like, okay, did the guys that were filming Thor, did their tripod break? Is that why all that's what's happening there? Mr. Branagh, could you explain that to the court, please? And his answer is, fuck you. I don't know who you are. I'm Kenneth Branagh. I'm an Academy Award winner. Go
yeah, I was like, the answer is I'm Kenneth Branagh, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's boom. But so, Thor does this same general storyline. Obviously, also with a superhero origin. But does it better, even though they're two very different things. They're both space-based. But they have to learn to be better. Hal has the lowest character arc I think I've ever seen in my life. Again, as I pointed out before, he goes from, this is weird, I have a ring, I fly through space, holy shit. Oh my God, Jeffrey Rush is a weird fish dude. Actually, the guest, for those of you who are Pirates of the Caribbean fans, or just fans of Jeffrey Rush in general, if you watch this movie, he plays this big fish dude who basically explains everything. He's the exposition green. He's the exposition lantern. You know, you have Green Lanterns. You have so it's a much smaller core. But Hal doesn't go through much of a change. He goes from, this is weird. Okay, I quit. Okay, well, some shit happened, so I will use my ring to create a Hot Wheels ramp to catch a falling helicopter.
What a Chekhov's gun that is, though.
Right. Well, again, and see, the thing is, it's like, you know, as the defense pointed out, as we were the beginning of this talk.
Defense hasn't spoken yet, Chief.
No. I mean, before, when we were just doing our introductions, you talked about how you had come to meet Green Lantern. You said, and I quote, "How do you deal with a character who has unlimited power?" Now, I agree on that point. That would be one of the tough hurdles to do. But they don't even try to do any under the unlimited stuff. They really feels like they went through a picture of a Google search of iconic moments in the Green Lantern comic and went, "All right, Hot Wheels, write that down. Airplanes that are green and shit, write that down."
It's just as though the producers were trying to write the movie, isn't it?
It is. And again, that is one of the biggest issues, is you can tell that the production company's fingerprints are all over this. Sorry, that was actually my next note. Parallax is done too early. We think that our main villain's going to be Potato Head, but we don't get Potato Head. We get Potato Head who faints, and then Parallax himself shows up.
He screams a lot.
He does scream a lot.
We had a really good actor, and we had him scream a lot.
Well, because again, when he found out he was in DC, he went to Kim Basinger and was like, "Hey, I think I'm the prettiest one in this thing. So you were the prettiest one in '89. What did you do for Batman?" "Oh, I just screamed a lot." "Got it. I'm on it. I'm all over it." You know,
Kim, what was your motivation for Batman '89? Yell.
Money, lots and lots of money.
Got it.
I had to drink
the Potato Head Man screams and faints. Parallax shows up, sucks the power out of him, killing him, and now Hal has to fight Parallax. Parallax is too early as a character. This was supposed to be the start of a trilogy, and you're throwing in the biggest Green Lantern villain short of Spectre.
I'm sorry. This is the same studio that in a few years is going to start their Superman story with fucking Doomsday.
Well, I'm taking it not start it, but the next step forward was Doomsday.
Yeah, I mean, for God's sakes, these people, it is amazing they got the Lord of the Rings right, because the way they do the DC movies years, one would be surprised they didn't start the Lord of the Rings with the Battle of Pelennor Fields.
But remember, technically, Warner Brothers didn't own New Line Cinema, who did Lord of the Rings, until after the trilogy was completed.
Right.
That's the reason we didn't run into the problem. It's because they hadn't touched it yet.
We're not storming at the Battle of the Gates of Mordor.
Worse. And Aragorn cut off Sauron's head. We cut to black and say, 7 years later. Or 7 years earlier.
Right. Either way.
That's how we get around the Jordan.
Frodo standing at the lip of Mount Doom with the ring. Yeah, 1 year ago, I knew I was in deep trouble.
Yeah. No, I want, if they're gonna do that, I want the opening narration from Ratatouille, and I want like him fighting with Gollum in the freeze frame. This is me. As you can tell, my life's kind of taken a bad turn.
Yeah.
Then exactly. 3 years earlier. But to my argument to wrap up, I wanted to like this movie. And again, as I already pointed out, there's a lot of movies that I like that everyone else doesn't. Ghostbusters 2 is in my top 10. I love that movie. But I watched that when I was so little that, you know, it became kind of part of the wiring. So in the sense that we're not actually going to be able to damn this movie to, like, again, the pits of Mount Doom, I will say this. If you're a Green Lantern fan, give it a watch. You might like it, but I really, really, really doubt it. This movie feels like they brought in a director who could do this, who had proved 3 times he could do it, and then they decided that, no, we just kind of want you to stand there, and when all the shit hits the fan, we want everyone to be able to point it at you. Even though they forgot the fact that the internet exists, and Martin Campbell's going to get interviewed and go, "Guys, we had a whole different movie in mind. We had a whole different thing we wanted to do, and they took it out of my hands." So, Your Honor, would you read the charges again, please, so I can directly sum up my point to those?
The accused, the movie stands accused of the following: not being an actual Green Lantern movie, the main lead stands accused of being a poor choice for this character. The character as written stands accused of not being an appropriate representation of the actual comic book character.
Thank you, Your Honor. To sum up, this movie's first accusation of not being a Green Lantern movie. It's not. It's a movie that has a character that's similar to it, but you could have called this Meteor Man.
And no one would have known. Would have done better.
Number two, of being ill cast in this part, every young actor, to helping the defense for a moment, every young actor tries to go for something like this if they are themselves a nerd. Ryan Reynolds was a nerd, but he should have been anybody else in this movie. He should have been Taika Waititi's character. We would have bought that more. He did not, in the opinion of the prosecution, and I believe a good opinion of a good chunk of the fans, did not have the bravado nor the personality of Hal Jordan. Not only in his acting, but also in his face. Ryan Reynolds has a much softer face. He doesn't have a face that demands immediate, you know, respect. Or sorry, that
you said Van Wilder in space, and that's all I can think about now.
Just make the toga green, and instead of like holding the torch, he's got the ring. Still got the arm around the
ground. Honestly, it's either Van Wilder in space or Waiting too.
Right. So finally, and in my final points, the people that are most damned for this movie, as with many things, is the production company, is the execs that were in charge. However, to everyone else, Ryan Reynolds, Martin Campbell, hell, even Blake Lively, they should have seen where this was going, and like so many other directors and stuff before them, this was not any of their first time out at bat. Martin Campbell, obviously, as I pointed out, had a career, should have stepped away from the project, citing creative differences, citing scheduling, however they wanted to nicely put it, and walked away from this, because we all would be better off right now if this movie did not exist, because its worst crime that has not been brought up is that it makes us hope and scream for a better Green Lantern movie that everyone is too terrified now to make.
I'm just wondering, in the parallel universe where that happens, it's like, it's weird, the entire cast and crew got projectile diarrhea.
Right.
Wait, how did that happen? All right. Up next is the defense.
Okay. Let me start off by saying I'm going to agree with 85 to 90% of everything prosecution just said. This debate began as, is it a good movie? And Your Honor made the point that if you call it anything else and you take the expectation of a specific character and a specific writing and an arc that you already know, if you take that out of the equation, what you've got is a solid B, maybe B plus movie with pretty good special effects given the year it was made in. And it's an origin story. So they went too far. They blew up too many things. The only thing they didn't include was tits and ass. The production crew was, or the production company was trying to make a big to do. Martin Campbell, although he's a wonderful director, he hadn't been in superhero world yet. He admitted in a number of interviews he didn't really know what to do with this guy, but a writer, Greg Berlanti, did. So they fired him.
as this company is wont to do.
Exactly. He got the production cleared. He got the writing underway. Everything was looking good. They got Martin Campbell based on his original script, and then they fired that guy. No. What I'm in defense of is this is a good movie. The problem is, it has the Green Lantern core of audience waiting for something very specific that they're not going to get. In addition to that, at the time the Green Lantern trailer drops, there are three other trailers active: Captain America, Thor, and X-Men, all of whom are going to take in 50 times more income and 50 times more seats than Green Lantern will because of when it was released. Then the Green Lantern trailer drops. Okay, maybe we'll get a little roadworthiness out of that. No, 3 days later, Thor opens. You could sing an opera in a cyclone and not get out of that. Thor opens. Then between the time that Green Lantern's trailer drops, Thor opens, X-Men First Class opens, Pirates of the Caribbean opens, Hangover 2 opens, Kung Fu Panda opens, the second one, and they all outperform Green Lantern just point to point, like in club. So what we're doing is we're playing Little League baseball in the major leagues. And if you take it out of that league, if you take this movie out of that condition and you set it over here, Ryan Reynolds is a fine Hal Jordan if you don't expect a specific Hal Jordan, which is exactly what happened. He Ryan Reynolds has always played himself. The only time I ever saw him play anyone else was in the Wolverine movie when he was playing the first version of Deadpool. He got a little bit of drama going on there. But Ryan Reynolds always plays Ryan Reynolds. He practically owns that. He was a stand-up comedian before that. He's the same kind of guy. He's the same kind of comedy. It's always a little risque. It's always in your face. It's always grinning. There's always a big grin at the end. That's Ryan Reynolds being a superhero. And since this superhero, if we stop calling him Green Lantern, since this superhero is in his infancy, we can forgive all the spectacular things they threw at him. The problem is, much as we've already observed, they threw Parallax at him on day one. And then they threw this little guy Hammond in, who was originally the bad guy. This is going to be one of many bad guys that we march the Green Lanterns through. They grow and they grow and they grow. And then we have the big loss. Oh, my God. He's lost his mind and he's become Parallax. That never happened. That's because Martin Campbell had no idea how to defend the writing. He's never had to do that before. Not really. The production company never threatened him before. They threatened him this time. We're going to get these things. You're going to get these things included. Or we're going to get these things canned. We're already in the worst sea of movies that a movie has ever been released into. We need big things to happen. Here are the big events in Green Lantern. And we need to get them all done now. Because that's the only way we're even going to get one movie out of this. That's another thing. The production company didn't want a series. They were in such a panic over the sea of movies they were being released into, they gave up. We're going to be lucky to get away with our budget, which I think they just barely did when all was said and done. I think it was $220 million, and they just barely cleared it. So let me present a more organized...
You're not wrong. It was a $200 million budget. Its box office was $220. Mm-hmm. So if you're using the standard that we use, which is twice your budget to encompass marketing, this thing lost money.
It lost a lot of money.
It lost a lot of money.
Because of marketing. All right, let me organize this. Defense is going to argue that the 2011 movie Green Lantern is at its worst ordinary and is thus completely undeserving of the landslide of inexact and uninformed criticism that's been heaped on it. The name Green Lantern is what killed it. Further, defense will prove conclusively that one of the many points of contention, that being computer-generated effects, was competitive at the time and even advanced the state of the art in a number of ways. When people don't know how to criticize a CG movie, they say, oh, the CG was bad, because that's nebulous. You never have to say why it's bad. You say something like, it didn't look right. Well, gee, an animated suit with light lines drawing over your body, how's that supposed to look? No one's seen one of those before. We've seen an attacking cloud before, so I'm going to cut them off there. Defense will conclude that if you mentally recreate the environment that the movie was released into, it will become clear that the legitimate failures of the movie, which are actually pretty small, are wildly exaggerated and its triumphs utterly ignored due to the fact that DC had yet again allowed the producers to deeply meddle into the source material, which is the only thing that was going to sell the movie to begin with. If you call this movie Meteor Man, you've got a pretty decent movie. Not good. It wasn't written that well. It's the expectation of Green Lantern that makes it a bad movie. Ryan Reynolds did fine. Blake Lively did what she could with what she was given. And given what she was given, there wasn't much there.
Yeah, it really wasn't.
I mean, she was nearly...
The hardest part about this is that I can't yell objection. I'm the judge.
Well, actually, no, we can't object because these are his opening arguments. We don't get to object to the next part.
That's fine.
Probably would have shown Blake Lively off quite a lot if they'd been allowed to, and they still managed to get Ryan Reynolds undressed repeatedly. And that's not necessarily a complaint. He's worth staring at. But the Green Lantern fans were so badly disappointed with this thin, backhanded approach to their character, one they walked into the theater owning, that they themselves began this landslide of we hate it, we hate it, we hate it, a whole bunch of like dozens, even hundreds of YouTube reviews. Chris, I watched most of them. Criticized the movie vaguely. It was bad. I didn't believe it. They don't say why anything is wrong. Okay. We have to be fair to YouTube. As this negativity grew, the algorithm grabbed it and it got worse. So the criticisms grew more and more vague, bigger and bigger. No one was saying why they didn't like it. And the ones that were criticizing CG, you guys didn't even mention it because we know it's good CG. We're fans. We've seen this kind of stuff. It was decent. It was even pretty good at the time. But that's where they were throwing it. Now, we have to be fair to YouTube because the algorithm only considers likes, comments, shares, and duration of watching time. That's the trailers we're talking about, really. But that's where the landslide began, in YouTube and in popular culture. I'm sorry. The high engagement results in better visibility. Better visibility makes it saleable, and then you get monetized. The algorithm isn't negative. We are. When the landslide began, no one defended it as a decent movie because that's really all it is. We had three other movies raising our expectations. We had Thor, X-Men. We had Captain America. Every time, bigger, better. The best writing available in comics, at least in movies, were applied to those. And we appear in our little rowboat, our little Green Lantern rowboat, with a decent movie amidst this typhoon of gigantic, wonderful movies. It's a good movie. It is not a Green Lantern movie. And if you walk in, I'm just going to maintain this. We're going to start just back up a little bit. If you walk into any movie having read the book, leave now. Just go home. Starship Troopers?
Sustained. Sustained.
Okay. Just don't do that. But that's all we had. And that's the way that it had to be.
Can I share this with you? So we have some running gags, some common phrases that have been bandied about the network for the past 20-odd years that we've been doing this. And one of those is the Tom Bombadil effect, which is, so people who don't know what the fuck a Tom Bombadil is, he's a character in the Lord of the Rings books, and he's not included in the movie. They take a lot of the Tom Bombadil stuff, they give it to Treebeard, they give it to some other characters. They wrote him out of the story. They also wrote out the raising of the Shire by Saruman after Helm's Deep, and it's taken out for a variety of reasons. I mean, if you've ever watched that, and I love the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I talk about it incessantly, it's clear why those things were left out of the movie. It becomes unwieldy after a while, and and so, you know, when I invoke the Tom Bombadil effect, I am, one, mocking people who go, I don't like the Lord of the Rings movies. They didn't include Tom Bombadil. At which point I start doing this. Oh, no! Tom Bombadil's not in the movie. It's terrible. Why? Why, Peter Jackson? Mocking with vicious ridicule. I fucking hate
it. Of course, then he gets back at all of us and takes The Hobbit and goes, fine. He didn't like that I had to cut stuff? I'm going to stretch this to eternity.
Oh, look, the two pages, that's the Battle of the Five Armies. Let's make it a 2-hour feature.
Did you guys give me shit? Peter goddamn Jackson over here. Although we were lucky, if it'd been Guillermo del Toro, that bitch would have been like 12 plus hours.
I want to give the lectern back to Mac, but I needed to tell you about that because that is a very common thing on here, is to invoke the Tom Bombadil thing of, look, movies are not books and books are not movies. They're two different mediums. Their approach to narrative is way different. What you can do in a book and what you can do in a movie are not the same thing. The art of adaptation is being able to take the essence of the book and put it on screen in a way that does the book a degree of justice, but is not a word for word or shot for shot adaptation of the literal book. It's impossible to do that. So I immediately throw out any argument that begins with, oh, the book was better. No, the book was the book, you asshole.
Your Honor, calm down.
Please continue, defense.
All right. That's really what we're dealing with here. This is, I'm glad you brought up Tom Bombadil. This is purely expectation of a level of writing that already existed in the comics. So the fans knew it was there. They just wanted to see it. They wanted to walk around as Ryan Reynolds. They wanted to see they wanted to see him fly into space. They wanted a live action view of this character. But when the production crew, when the production company realized the tidal waves they were going to have to release this movie into, or just can it for 2011, just back off. No, we were wrong. We're going to release it later. But that's not really going to save them, even if they do. I got lost in my own thought there. You're not going to fulfill that expectation. It's never going to happen. When they saw the sea that they were releasing this movie into, the X-Men, Thor, Captain America, they panicked. They stepped hard on Campbell. They fired the chief writer. They hired a bunch of guys who would do as they were told, and they did. And if you stop calling it Green Lantern, it's a B-plus movie. The qualities of it are B-plus, in some places A. It's a fine movie. It's just not a Green Lantern movie. And that's what I came here to argue.
Okay. So I don't know if there's... So like I said, normally when we do this, it's one person, you know, the prosecution goes and it gives their argument in totem. The defense rebuts it, and then I usually give the prosecution one last go to address anything, and then we just sort of open it up for general discussion. So I wasn't sure if I made that clear. So Dorian, is there anything you would like to rebut in his defense?
Just a few. We'll start with the biggest thing. The CGI was fine. It obviously, you know, it was rendered correctly. You know, it probably could have done. There are a few shots where it could definitely have done with some more rendering. Just because, especially the first shot of his mask on his face looks very, very fake, in my opinion.
This painted on mask.
It really, and again, I'm sorry?
It was terrible. Okay. We agree.
But I think the main issue a lot of people had, and I will also bounce this back with the whole, if you've read the book, go home. You know, because 9 out of 10 times, you ain't gonna like what you get. I think, though.
Sorry, I have to interject again. So my dad's opinion of the last couple of Harry Potter adaptations, he was like, "Yeah, these movies are a best of the books." Like, and again, have you ever seen these books? These are murder weapons. They're huge. You can make houses out of them. There's no way you're getting all of that into a 2.5-hour movie. Not even close.
Oh God, no. And again, I think the reason that Harry Potter did so well. And this is kind of the biggest rebuttal overall, but I wanted to kind of save this for for this part of it, is that this movie is, again, it's harmless. There's nothing, it doesn't destroy a character, but it does not do him any justice. The CGI was noisy and uninspired. Just because it's good, just because it works, doesn't mean it's not noisy and uninspired. The suit just... Again, the defense and I had a brief meeting about a week before the trial, just to make sure, you know, we agreed that we weren't actually going to murder each other doing this. although
there really was,
we get enough likes on YouTube. And one of the things I brought up was like, and this was really distracting for me. But again, as a filmmaker and as a director and as someone who has had to work with special effects and stuff before that we had to green screen a lot. There's certain things that stand out to me. So this is less as a prosecutor and more as a movie fan. The superimposed navel of Ryan Reynolds on the suit. There's a shot he's hovering there.
Look, I know I'm not supposed to yell objection, but before this goes any further, Batman's nipples.
We'll get there. We'll get there. We're heading that direction. Okay. Oh. We've upgraded every superhero costume. And again, the reason that I think it deserves a little bit of a pass when it comes to the costumes, this is the first time we've done this in live action. Well, excuse me, the second time. There was one in the 70s, but it was like this made-for-TV movie. Adam West and Burt Ward were still Batman and Robin, and they had this. Again, it was just that spandex. You can get it online, you know. But with everything that we could do with him being a soldier, him, you know, having been active duty, you know, I feel that the suit should have been more armored. But again, that just comes down to nitpick. But as an origin story, it fails. Batman Begins, or the original 1989 Batman, is very different from the books. you know, the comic books. Michael Keaton alone, first time we saw him, again, all the hate mail that was written in, like people, it wasn't just email where you could be like, I'm going to move over here for a second. I don't like what you did. Send. You actually had to sit down and be like, dear sir or madam, I do not like that you, and you had to get postage and mail that in.
My dearest Tim Burton, what you have done to the Batman's character is a crime against humanity and cinema.
And you have punched my childhood repeatedly in the face, and may you die a horrible death. But the funny thing was that they dropped a trailer for 1989 Batman. Everyone went, okay, with the benefit of hindsight, I'm going to go see it. I'm not sure, because again, the fights were, he's too short. He doesn't look like Bruce Wayne. And to be honest, his
media at the time, I'm a really famous media.
Sorry, well, in defense of like the people's like not accepting Michael Keaton as Batman, what had Michael Keaton done up to that point that would convince you he'd be a good Batman? This is the Ben Affleck argument all over again.
Right, but you see, my thing is that both Ryan Reynolds and Michael Keaton were previous comedians. And because of the direction and the writing, and thankfully the execs somewhat staying out of the way, Michael Keaton's version of Batman and Bruce Wayne was accepted. Everybody lost their shit when he was announced coming back for The Flash. And, I mean, they canceled Batgirl, but we're all like, oh, cool, Flash movie. And Michael Keaton's in it as Batman. Woo! Like, I felt bad for The Flash. It was like, I knew there were Flash fans out there going, yay! And then there was just this tidal wave of cheers because Michael Keaton's coming back as Batman.
Right.
And that is where Reynolds failed. Keaton was known as a comedic actor, but there were several things he had done previous to that, including a Shakespeare performance that showed he had a deep end dramatic range. Reynolds had not been put through that fire yet. Not until recently have I think he's been put through that fire at all.
I was going to say, when the defense was talking about Ryan Reynolds' filmography, the first thing I kept thinking of in terms of when he's not being Ryan Reynolds, he's perfectly capable of not being Ryan Reynolds. My argument a lot of times on Dan U Hollywood with Robert and his dissatisfaction with Ryan Reynolds' acting ability is no one asked him to do anything else. But on occasion, he gets something like the Netflix movie The October Project, where he's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sorry, The Adam Project.
But yeah, I guess the end of my rebuttal is that one of the reasons I do not think this is a good movie, I don't think it deserves as much crap as it gets, but it is wholly uninspired and such, is that, again, I retreaded 1989 Batman, Batman Begins, and I'll go directly to Iron Man, Captain America, Thor. Name a moment or two, a line even, from any of those movies. What makes them good is they're cinematically shot very well without relying so much on CG, which I understand. You're in space. There's a lot you have to rely on CG. And the reason I'm not going to quote the lines is that anyone who knows me knows that most movies are filed up in here, so I could quote them anyway. So that's not fair. Other than the, you think I wouldn't recognize you because I couldn't see your cheekbones. I cannot, for the life of me, gun to my head, sorry, YouTube, tell you another line from that movie. Whereas the other ones, Iron Man, for one, and I will quote a couple just to make my argument, Iron Man, there's 1,000 good lines in that first one, including but not limited to, okay, let's face it, this isn't the worst thing you've caught me doing.
God damn it, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Also on Iron
Man. Get out of my brain, Dorian!
So we can make it two. When he's still building the suit, Iron Man turns the robot he'd made in when he was in high school. If you toes me again and I am not on fire, I am donating you to a city college. Captain America. You know, when you brought a 90-pound asthmatic onto my army base, you know, I let it slide. Thought it might be useful to you, like a gerbil. You know, Cap covers the fake grenade. The doctor turns to Tommy Lee Jones' as General. Tommy Lee Jones goes, he's still skinny, and walks off. But Thor, again, I would go through all of these, but I don't want to drag this down for this turn into the Dorian quotes movie thing. But the point I'm making here is Green Lantern doesn't have any of those moments, even visual moments. It doesn't have, I remember this. I remember when Michael Keaton held the dude over the you know, the building. I'm not going to kill you. I want you to tell all your friends about me. What are you? I'm Batman. You know, very simplistic, but you remember those moments. Those moments stick in your head. Green Lantern was so rushed and just surrounded by the squeezing hands of a production company that all of those epic moments that a lot of people would remember are gone. And that's why I don't believe it is actually a good movie. I believe it's a harmless movie, but that doesn't make it good.
I'm sympathetic to Mac's arguments. I will give my final judgment momentarily, but I do want to kick this around a little bit.
Oh, we can fight all night. We've like done this for...
No, we can't.
well, we can. We just shouldn't.
So I'm sympathetic to a lot of Mac's argument. I think Mac, you did a fine job. In fact, you know what? Mac, it's your first time on here. I'm going to be very nice to you. Mac, you did a great job tonight. Okay. You can. You're allowed to come back if you want.
You're not immediately fired.
Yeah, that's so good to hear. Thank you.
You have not been shunned. but no, so my daughter takes a math test and she fails it. And she hands me the test. And I have, you know, my immediate reaction is, you're not putting in the effort. You don't care. You're doing the, I don't want to do this. So I'm not, you know, I'm not going to try. And I'm angry at you. I'm disappointed. And then she goes, hold on. Mom had me out late. I've been going to the teacher and asking for extra help, but I'm not getting it. I've said repeatedly, I don't understand the material. I tried as hard as I can. I did all the homework. I don't know what the disconnect is, but this is my best effort with the amount of help that I was given under the circumstances I had. And I go, okay, well, I'm not mad at you anymore. This doesn't change the fact that it's still an F and we now have to redo this. Okay. You still have to learn the material. It's a metaphor. Also happen in real life, but it's also a metaphor, and it's a metaphor that says it's great. All those things you said are great, Mac, and you know, knowing the context of it's low hanging fruit to just say Green Lantern's incompetent, the people at Warner Brothers are monsters, and they, you know, and they've ruined people's childhoods. Okay, that's 90% of YouTube, and I get it, but I'm trying to get a higher order of thinking going here, and that's what Mac did tonight. He said, it's not just in general incompetence. There was a whole wave of context here that explains why this movie was what it was. My problem is it doesn't change the fact that the movie is what it is. I'm glad we understand that now. I'm more sympathetic toward it. I'm going to be less harsh in any discussions further of this movie. But I can't. But it doesn't change any of the arguments that Dorian made in terms of what the movie actually is. It just gives it context. You know, there's an explanation for why this exists the way that it does. My other problem with the so-called Meteor Man, but it's not. If I make you an omelet and call it a ham sandwich, this is a very bad ham sandwich. I don't, you know, if that's what you think this is, you failed miserably. It's a fucking omelet. And that's like the problem here. They said this was a Green Lantern movie. This was advertised as a Green Lantern movie. That character is called Hal Jordan. You can say all day long, oh, but you know, don't care about the comics. And here's the problem. When you decide you're going to adapt something, you owe it to the source material to do it justice. You can do your own spin on it. You can do your own interpretation. You can experiment with the IP, and I've seen all of those things, and some of them have worked out well and some of them don't, but at the very end, at the end of the day, either do the IP or don't, but don't throw something up on screen, cross out the original name of it and call it something else, because you know that happens also. I can't tell you how many times I've said this. We just said this about Street Fighter. This was someone's G.I. Joe script that they crossed out G.I. Joe and wrote in Street Fighter. You know, crossed out Duke and put Guile, that sort of thing. And it's like, don't do that. It's obvious when you're doing it, and we all hate it.
Over how many times they did that during the Hellraiser
mythos,
where it was like, you could tell the script was originally supposed to be like a cult mystery story with original characters, but they didn't have any faith on it, so they just stamped Hellraiser, and we'll throw Pinhead in there somewhere.
All right.
Get Doug Bradley back in costume before he chokes all of us.
Not once in the history of cinema has that worked. Not once it's been a satisfying fan experience. The last thing I'm going to say, and it's more of a general observation about movie going, there's this belief that in order to make a general audience crowd pleasing feature, you have to sacrifice the nuances and finer points of the IP, and because that's what brings in That's what brings in the kids. That's what brings in the girlfriends. And that's how you make $1 billion. And never once in the history of film has that worked. The way to succeed is cater to the fans. The fans bring their parents. The fans bring their girlfriends. The fans bring other people in. When the experts, the fans, give something the stamp of approval, everyone else follows. Deadpool is probably a really good example of that. Deadpool is a niche character that isn't known by a lot of people. And a lot of people kind of hate the character. Like, it's like, oh, well, this is a satire of comics that has gone way too far. Also, not the first time that's said good, on it.
Yeah.
But comic book fans showed up the weekend that Deadpool came out and were like, this is the comic writ large. This is the comic come to life. This is what I wanted. This does the comic. And they went home and they told everyone, hey, this, first of all, you want to see, I can't remember the actor's name, like something Baccarat, you know, bang Ryan Reynolds for an hour and a half. Go see Deadpool. It's awesome. Also, she's really hot. But they went home and said, hey, everyone, Deadpool's awesome. They knocked it out of the park with this. And so people went, oh, okay. Well, my nerdy fucking Luddite hateful fucking neckbeard cousin who's flipped the Thanksgiving dinner table over because we dared say, you know, something cross about Superman said Deadpool was okay. I guess we should go see this fucking thing. And as it turns out, it was great. And it made, you know, shit tons of money. So, you know, going back to Green Lantern,
which Deadpool also made fun of.
Which Deadpool
don't make the super suit green or animated.
While I appreciate the defense's argument, and it's certainly valid, it doesn't change the fact that this was not a... It's guilty of being not a good Green Lantern movie. So I rule in favor of the prosecution.
Put your arms down.
We are the champions, my friend.
Lost the one we had in person.
Saving up all the big guns to get you on camera and be like, ha.
All right, so we can just spend a few minutes just kind of chatting about the movie. Sorry, I can't forgive Blake Lively for this. She's an actual actress. I don't know what the fuck she was doing in this movie, but there were times where her performance, hostage letter. I don't know what, like, those early scenes where she's like giving Hal the business. When he crashes the jet, and she's yelling at him with all the she's yelling at him with all the force of somebody who doesn't speak the language. Like, what is this?
Blink twice, Blake, if you're being held against your will. Like, I mean, I know you got a husband out of it, but
did she show up to set fucking drunk and like, I don't know my lines? Like, ugh, I don't want to wait around for her. And so, like, this is like somebody with a cue card. And she's just like that whole line is one take, and she's just reading off cue cards. It's awful. And Max looking at me like, Jesus, Rattlin, are you drunk? No, I swear to God, I watched this the other day, and I was like, holy shit, this is not good.
Well, let me give you another way to think of this. This is a director under threat giving really simple directions to a really good actress who knows there's more in the scene. But he's telling her, be angry, more, more, more. Finally,
we're not hardly giving her any direction at all because we don't have time.
And then all she's got is Ryan. He's just as lost. And he does what he always does. I'm playing Ryan Reynolds again. So yeah. She's got to make the scene. She's got to carry it from the beginning of the scene to the end of the scene, which means they have to end up over here. The only way to do that without subtlety, which the director is not going to allow now because they're holding a gun to his head, is if I yell at him a lot. That's all I get to do.
Yeah, and look, it sounds like I'm being a little too harsh on Blake Lively. Then I'll rescind some of that because clearly there's a direction issue here. But I said that from the start. You know, in my defense, I said, she's a great actress. I don't know what went wrong here. Well, what went wrong was the direction. But she's the director, no service to this woman. It made her look really bad.
And he was, I'm after him. Of all the things that went wrong with this movie, him. You signed on to a superhero movie with what he admitted later was no real feel for superhero movies, let alone Green Lantern. That's like going to the Olympics and getting into javelin and say, I once threw a baseball. No.
I've thrown something in my life. At some point, something has swung from my hand.
It's the
idea, right?
It's the Independence Day rule from Will Smith. I saw the plane. I saw the spaceship fly. I'm pretty sure I can fly it. Great. Well done. I wish that worked in real life. Yeah, I saw open heart surgery. I'm pretty sure I can do this.
You start here, right?
Give me the gloves, man. Let's do this thing. Yeah, no, it's very obvious that, you know, and again, as I said in my arguments, I really wish that both Reynolds and Lively and Campbell had gotten to a point, which again, you can do under contract. Like, I think you have to pay a little bit, but like, guys, you don't have a feel for this. You don't have an idea for it. You won't let me direct. You know, I'm sorry. Bye.
Well, I don't know how many of the people in the, working on this movie had their heart in it either.
Once it had been written twice, I doubt that anyone did. I wouldn't have.
Yes, and at some point, you like, because here's the other thing, and keep this in mind, you know, actors have to pay bills too. And when you're committed to a project, remember, you're going to get paid, but you're not getting paid. And and if you've committed months to this thing, right, and then you walk away, you're walking away, you know, that's months that you didn't do something else. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Also, you don't, you know, every time you walk away from something, you're the person that walked away from a major motion picture feature. How reliable are you?
Yeah.
Well, I think in Campbell's case, he had enough of a career already behind him that he could have gone, guys.
If you're Blake Lively, though, are you taking that chance?
Blake Lively, maybe not, obviously, and maybe not Reynolds. Because I think Reynolds really started to want to step into that more dramatic.
Oh, the other side of that is in 2011, Ryan Reynolds isn't really Ryan Reynolds just yet.
No.
Ryan Reynolds doesn't really become Ryan Reynolds until after Deadpool. And,
whoa,
you know,
hey, whoa. Right, hang on. He had a whole career in stand-up comedy. No.
What I'm saying is he doesn't have cachet to say, I can walk away from a project and studios still have faith in me. No one thinks I'm a flight risk. No, you know, I'm not dependable.
Okay.
That doesn't happen until after Deadpool. The other side of that is, yes, he may have had a career, but he wasn't like big money Ryan Reynolds until after Deadpool.
Not that big, no. But he was on a trajectory, which is why they hired him for Green Lantern.
Right. But if he walks away from Green Lantern, he shoots exactly. That old shit.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
And Blake stayed because he did. He was up to his chin. I can't walk away from this because this is my first huge blockbuster lead. And he wanted to break into the comic book area. He wanted to play Deadpool. And he's not going to move anybody if he starts walking away from things.
The other thing side of this is it's something I have to explain to a lot of people is the comic book industry is not the movie industry. These people are not the same. No. Comic book writers come from a completely different walk of life than Hollywood production and you know, and actors and craft people do. And if your argument is I walked away from Green Lantern because it wasn't enough like the comic book, you will be drummed out of Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no one will understand your argument. It's like, that makes no fucking sense. Why would you walk? You know, your job is to act in a movie. Your job is to not act out the comic book you read when you were seven. That's going to be the argument that you run into.
Yeah, and at this time, like, I mean, with what I said, it's like, I wish they'd been able to do that. I understand why they couldn't. I'm just saying I wish they could have. Sure. And again, at this point, DC's still sort of ruling the world thanks to the Batman movies. Like Marvel at this point, you know, 2008, obviously, Iron Man comes out, and then the next year following Iron Man 2. So Marvel's getting speed, but they're not, you know, as they are today. Well, I mean, today they're still getting crap again, but you know,
to be clear, Marvel doesn't become Marvel until the Avengers.
Yeah.
Like Iron Man does okay. Hang on. I'm going with box office here. Phase one goes like this. Iron Man's fairly successful and makes a decent amount of money. Iron Man 2, people don't like, but it makes money. The Hulk barely makes money. Captain America barely makes money. Thor barely makes money. The Avengers makes $1 billion and changes Hollywood forever. For the worse, by the way. For the worse. But that's a poll of the podcast.
Basically what he means by it not being Marvel yet is it's not the Marvel... As we kind of talked about with Green Lantern as well, is it's like the fans bring more people. Mm-hmm. Marvel was proving that they could do these movies well enough, you know, that it would become what the MCU is, you know. Because Kevin Feige or Feig, however it is actually pronounced. I hear it both ways, but whatever. One of the rules he had was we make one movie at a time. You know, even if we got two going on at the same time, you know, kind of like they did with Hulk and Iron Man 2, is we're focused on making that one movie at, you know, and if this fails and we got the chance to tell our stories and we leave it for a decade and let somebody else try to take a swing at it. But Marvel just did their research better and were able to find writers that could capture the ideas and the feelings that were in the comic book without going page by page, frame by frame.
Yeah, well, that first phase of Marvel also, and somewhat phase two, they weren't totally slaves to the showrunner structure either. That's a midway through phase two thing, through phase three. In the beginning, they were doing what DC was attempting to do in one of their iterations, because they've only had 97 of those, which is they were more director and theme focused movies. It's like, okay, we're gonna do Iron Man. It's gonna, you know, and it's Jon Favreau's vision, and they kind of left Jon Favreau the fuck alone to make his movie, which is why Iron Man 2 not so great, because that got a lot of studio interference. But like the Hulk is its own thing. Captain America is its own thing. Thor is its own thing. And then the Avengers again changes the world for the worse. But makes $1 billion in doing so. It's pretty phenomenal.
We may have damned the world, but hey, at least we all got paid.
Yeah. Every time I say something like, you know, like, what, you don't like the Avengers movies? No, I just know that I know what Avengers did to movie making, and it didn't make it better. So yes, it brought a lot of people joy, and you know, and it made Marvel the success that it was for a time, but the net effect of how it got executives thinking and what got greenlit and how things got made. Yeah, it's a nightmare. We have documented that for years now on this network. All right. Mac, I'm going to give you the last word here, since you are our new guest and our new friend in our sandbox. Anything else you would like to say about Green Lantern, this podcast experience, you know, your youth growing up, anything you want to talk about? You got last licks.
I love the podcast. I got introduced through Dorian. The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, I really watched that all the way through. I said, oh man, I love this. I love the movie to begin with, but
some say I'm a little opinionated.
Yeah, I heard someone, I don't remember who told me that. But the whole thing about discussing any kind of art, including this kind of art, mm-hmm. is you're completely right. If I promise you an omelet, you can't bring me a ham sandwich. I meant to bring this up earlier. Starship Troopers.
Mm.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Heinlein fans just stabbing themselves with the book. Like, why?
Heinlein is rolling around in his grave. There's smoke rising from the cemetery. It's terrible. So you're completely right about Marvel, or I'm going to say the Avengers. The problem is the money makers, the guys that drive all these things that we really mm-hmm. love, get panicky. They see a formula that works, and they want to protect the little egg that they've made. That being their Green Lantern, their Thor, their X-Men, their Captain America. They get very selfish, very focused, because their lives are on that. So the formula that's destroying Hollywood is always the result of a big-ass success. I think people need to... I don't know how to say this. The benefit of these stories, the reason you got people into the movie to see Green Lantern, is the source material was compelling on little bitty pages of tissue. It was so good. The story was so good that we want to see it brought to life. Get someone involved. The first writer, what was his name again? Greg Berlanti. He was a worshiper. He wrote a wonderful story. That's how they got the director. That's how they got the actors. Then they fired the first guy. That's how you get stuck in a movie you don't want to do. They show you the legs. You say, oh, God, I want to be part of that. And then they cut out the legs. You've already signed the contract. And like Dorian pointed out, if you don't have a clause that says, hey, if you change this a lot, I'm out of here. Or if you're not in a position like Ryan Reynolds, where you've got to make a dent, you have to do it this time. He said on an interview recently, if I hadn't had Green Lantern fail, I would never have gotten Deadpool, because it failed so big. So when we're evaluating art, All you can ever do is, do I like it? And then take a look at why you like it. But I actually agree with the court completely. They promised us an omelet. They delivered a really decent ham sandwich.
Right.
But again, we're at a gourmet restaurant. There's all these other huge, wonderful movies around that are raising our expectations. And Green Lantern thought they were competing with Iron Man, and they just weren't. So,
nope. Yeah. It's funny. We've been documenting the rise and fall of DC, and something you said kind of pinged that, but I wanted to make sure I gave you your time. And that was the constant lack of courage at DC and Warner Brothers. Anytime there was a hiccup, a failure of any kind, you know, Batman v Superman didn't make $2 billion. So we have to now abandon the line of logic we're currently on. Except that, and I keep having to remind people of this, film is not an easy thing to turn around. These are long-term projects. I mean, the average month, Dorian, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but the average length of time of any shoot is about 3 months.
Three to six. That handles principal photography, all the big actors and stuff like
right.
that.
That's not eight. And that's not counting pre-production. That's not counting development. So, you know, these movies, like, you know, we talked about The Flash. So The Flash came out in the year of our Lord 2023. They started making that film 1955. I mean, it was ridiculous how long that film had been in production before it finally, Chris Bailey got released to the theaters. And, so it's like, we had this idea for The Flash, and then the world changes three times, you know, before we finally get the goddamn thing into the theaters. And then, like, oh, wow, this doesn't really fit the marketplace anymore. The whole market's fucking changed. And then, you know, like I said, along the way, it's like, we had this idea for The Flash. Okay, but a new guy's in charge now, so your idea has to change. Okay, but we've already spent the money. You know, the other really great example of this from last year was Indiana Jones, which, you know, we use the term scrapbooking. They shot that movie three fucking times and tested it in different areas. Okay, another example of this, Robert brings this one up now. This is his new favorite obsession. The new Captain America movie with Falcon, they've had to reshoot that from scratch. They had to rewrite the fucking thing. I think I saw today the Fantastic Four script, which is supposed to start shooting soon, has been rewritten three or four times. They keep, you know, and so these are not good starts to any one of these things. And if Green Lantern had any kind of production, as you seem to indicate that it did, it's no wonder this thing fell on its face. I value studios like A24, production companies like A24, because at least there, no matter what goofy shit like Bo is Afraid, you want to make, at least they just let you make it. You know, it's going to succeed or fail in its own terms, but God damn it, it's going to be your vision. I don't know if you guys have seen Poor Things yet, which is an adaptation of a novel, but Poor Things is fantastic. It is absolutely someone's vision, someone's collaboration put on screen for you to enjoy or not enjoy. And you don't get that same kind of icky, everyone's pissing in the pot feeling you get with a lot of superhero movies now, where it's no one's vision. It's just a mucked up mess that the Frankensteinian monster that they threw together and hope to God it works. And, oh, look, we're batting zero. Fucking one disaster after another. All right.
Like, I don't know.
All right, I want to thank Dorian and Mac for coming on tonight. This was fun. I really get to kind of sit back and just sort of watch people argue, which is an interesting thing for me. I tell you, the hardest part about it was I kept wanting to interrupt both of you. Like, yes, I want to address that point. It's like, I can't. That damn slave destruction.
When Dorian was making his opening arguments, I was like, fuck, I started writing things down.
just a little behind the scenes, when we talked about this podcast yesterday, and I kind of warned them both, I was like, let me tell you how the biggest criticism I get for people on the podcast is how everyone has to fight for fucking time. Like, this descends into like Fox News really fast. People just yelling at each other.
I think we did okay.
Good. This was good. So, On Trial definitely forces people to behave, which is nice.
Yeah, we'll have to get Mac back for an actual movie review. We almost got him for Renfield because Mac had actually played the character of Renfield. Mm-hmm. On stage, we have a funny story very quickly that I want to share, and he knows exactly what I'm about to say. there is a scene where Dracula is feeding Renfield in the play that Mr. Kettner was in. And the idea with the rat was that there was a blood pack in the rat, and that if you squeeze, the blood pack's going to explode, and it's going to dribble out the mouth. It's going to go all over Renfield. It's a cool-looking, iconic shot. Well, somehow in between getting the rat, the actor who's playing Dracula, getting the rat, picking it up, and beginning to squeeze it, the blood pack had moved into the ass of the rat. So the actor's squeezing, going, because you can't go, what the fuck is wrong with this rat? You know, you can't, like, it's not Dracula.
You're on stage. You've got to be dramatic.
Whoa! Yeah, it's like, not Dracula Den loving it. You can't make a joke out of this. So the actor finally gets angry enough. And again, Mac's sitting there doing this. And the actor finally gets angry enough that he squeezes the rat, hoping that he's just not putting enough force on it. But since the blood pack had moved into the ass of the rat, the back end of the of the rat's ass explodes and shoots this geyser of blood all the way the back end of the theater wall.
Because of the dim lighting, there was this jet of black goo flying across the room, and it hit a friend of mine right in her hair, decorated her hair. So we've got this bloodgasm hitting a friend of mine in the fourth row. It was horrible.
And then that's the title of Renfield 2. Renfield 2, Bloodgasm.
There's a we just finished up Disenchantment, and we had a rousing round of Give Him the Goo, which is all I now can think about. It's like you're holding the rat. Give him the goo. All right, Give Him the Goo is the phrase that pays, everybody. Yesterday, we certainly gave the Oscars the goo. Myself and Robert Winfrey. But hang on, before we say that, so yeah, we have to get Mac on for a DMU Hollywood, because that's going to be an experience. This was civil. this was nice.
That's because you were the judge.
Yeah, let's get you on for JMU Hollywood, where Robert and I have a screaming match. And Alexis is, yeah, Robert and I have a screaming match, and there's Alexis going, "Is anyone going to pay attention to me?" And it's like, "Shut up, Alexis." The men are talking.
it's great because it's like, Mac, you did defense this time of saying, like, you know, hey, this movie's not great, but, you know, these are the parts that are good about it. Normally on this podcast for Damn You Hollywood, that's my job. I'm the kid in the back seat going, the movie's not great, but these parts are good about it. Again, it's shut up, kid. Drink your juice box.
You guys look so deflated when he does that. He says, "Well, actually, this did well. That did well. It was all pretty good here." And then you guys look at each other like, "Well, yeah." I'm mad. I want to be mad.
Stop making me say nice things about this movie. I came here to hate fuck Haunted Mansion. I'm gonna hate fuck it. Leave me alone.
eat your chicken nuggets and watch Finding Nemo.
Keep pouring ice water in your shorts. It's not working.
Anywho, speaking of ice water in your shorts, myself, Robert, and Robert Winfrey did a triple feature of Oscar Best Picture Oscar nominated movies. We looked at Past Lives, The Holdovers, and Maestro, which once again, we have a reputation for being a little negative about pop culture. Go listen to us fillet all three of those movies. It's fantastic.
Well said.
It's the hoitiest of toity reviews. Yes, when Robert and I are nice to movies. Tomorrow, speaking of being nice to movies, I don't know if you know this or not, Mac, but February is Black History Month. And here on the Rattlegen Broadcast Network, we are allies of the Black community. We celebrate Black cinema throughout the month of February, and we are kicking it off with the following triple feature. See if you can guess the theme, okay? You're a smart guy. Clearly, you work in computers. Clearly, you're an educated, learned man. This might be too subtle for you. This triple feature is The Blackening, Black Christmas 2019, and Meet the Blacks.
No, I'm not going to get that one.
We all have black in the title.
I probably wasn't going to get it even if I did.
Yes, in February we do black shit, June we do gay shit, and July we do shark shit. That's how it goes here on the Rattlegen Broadcasting Network. So,
black shit, gay shit, and dark shit. Oh,
and shark shit.
Shark shit.
Sorry. Shark.
Yes.
That's better.
You're waiting for that last hammer to be like, oh God, no. And shark
shit, we can live with. Please tell me he doesn't do stuff for Native Americans. I don't need him to go Indian shit.
Just watch people that are on the call just kind of slowly do this.
We have fun. Anyway, yes, The Blackening, Black Christmas 2019, and Meet the Blacks. That'll be myself and friend of the Black community, Jason Teasley. Because as Ronnie Adams once said, not even a little. No, he's a poor boy from West Virginia, poor white boy from West Virginia. Because when you think about Black culture and Black cinema, you think Jew from New York and Jason Teasley from West Virginia.
Obviously. That's just obvious.
That's what Malcolm X was talking about back then.
Clearly.
Anyway. Yeah. And then slightly less racially tinged, myself and Evan Bevins, good to his mother. We are going to be doing a triple feature actor focus. We are looking at the cutie patootie that is Jennifer Garner, and we will be reviewing Family Switch, Elektra, and Peppermint. So, an odd cadre of movies that is.
You just wanted to hurt yourself in the middle, didn't you? Like, and then let's do Elektra because we don't like ourselves.
And throw in confusion. Let's get some whiplash going on.
Yeah. Evan Bemmons and I, the drunk drivers of podcast reviews. Next week, Alexis Haina and, again, friend of the Black community, Jason Teasley, will be looking at the Percy Jackson show on Disney. DMU Hollywood will be on Tuesday because Monday I will be at Pantera. So we'll be looking at Argyle. Our celebration of Black cinema continues with a triple feature of What's Love Got to Do with It? I Want to Dance with Somebody and Respect. And then we've got Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk coming up on the 17th. So to gear up for that, myself and Pat Mullen will be looking at the first two Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk fights. And we'll be analyzing them on the History of Boxing, which returns yet again for another season here in the year of our Lord 2024. Matt Kentner, show us where you piss from.
What's he saying to me, Dorian?
He's saying, like, was there anything you want to plug? Anything you have coming up? Anything audiences would be interested in?
I truly wish I had something current to plug. I don't, but I appreciate the space.
Okay. We'll figure out when you're coming back, and then that'll be fine. Dorian Price, priest, freaky guy, you.
Weirdo.
Want to try and take two on that one?
Not even a little bit. Show us where you're pissed from.
One take wonder. Now obviously Dorian Price at Frankie Pictures, both on Facebook and on Instagram, and giving TikTok up now soon. Also Snapchat, same stuff. A lot of big, interesting projects in the work. We have a couple of stage shows that we've been reached out to help fund production. These may be filmed, but more than likely they'll just be done in a stage way, but can't really say much about those at the moment due to NDAs, and that's just the fun of our job. Hey, we're doing something really fun. Really, what is it? I can't tell you shit.
I got a secret. I can't tell. I can't tell.
We don't talk about NDA. No. But also have a couple of short films and such that are going to be worked on. Or that we are working on at this moment. And as usual, as we say to all audience members, if it needs to be filmed, photographed, or otherwise edited and kept forever, give us a call at Frankie Pictures. We're always ready to listen, and we're ready to believe you.
Oh, God.
There's not a day that goes by that you're not on this podcast that I wish you hadn't. I wish you had called your production company Wonder Pictures, just so you can go, if it's good, it's a wonder.
I can't do that because I always already have a problem because my last name.
Mm-hmm.
There's a joke that we make, especially if I'm on set and I'm going, let's try this, and my DP is like, I don't know if that's going to work. I'm like, I have a plan. Just I know it sounds stupid, but stay with me. And when it works, it's now become a running joke, which she just goes, well, after all these years, I should know the price is right. So that's
just grabs an acoustic guitar. It's the price we gotta pay. It's the games we gotta play. You're doing Twisted Sister. Just let him do it.
And remember to spay and neuter your pets because we're going to make a Price is Right joke.
All right, folks. Thank you for joining us here on Trial. The court is now in recess. For Mac, for Dorian, I'm Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave.